afternoon. This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Mark Haney, who's out today. It may still be winter, but it's warming up, and that brings thoughts of getting ready for spring gardens and lawns coming back to life. We're going to talk today about what you can do outside now, even though it will likely get cold again before spring, and what you can do inside to plan your spring garden. Joining me are Carriage House Farm Garden Manager Kate Cook, Turner Farm Adult Education Director Melinda O'Brien. We're certainly happy to have you both here today.
Thanks for having us.
We're also happy to take your calls. You can call in with questions at 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, and we do tend to get a lot of calls during these shows. So if you have a question and you want to get on the line to make sure you get in, you can make your call early, and we'll get to those questions as soon as we can. Again, that number is 513-419-7100. So tomorrow, the forecast, 60 degrees. That means everybody's going to want to get outside and get started. Kate, tell us, where can people start? What can they do outside tomorrow when it's that warm?
Well, I know one of the things that I'm going to be working on personally is cleaning up all of the junk left over from last year's garden. I've got a lot of debris left in the field. I've got perennial herbs that need to be cut back, just other things to clean up. And then I start amending my garden with compost now.
Well, let's talk about that briefly. Not the compost so much, but even the perennial herbs you said. So do you get herbs through the winter?
I have some through the winter, but that's primarily because I have them under cover. For home gardeners, that could be something as simple as like putting a pillowcase over your sage plant or your oregano or even an old sheet. I have mine in a high tunnel. That's how I keep my rosemary surviving in these colder winters that we've been enjoying over the last few years.
So what do you do when you're cleaning up? What do you do with those? You said you have to prune them. You just cut them back all the way? Or what do you do?
Most of it, I am cutting it back all the way because that tends to die in the colder weather. So that all goes into next year's compost pile.
All right. And Melinda, tell us what things you think people can start working on outside now.
Well, you actually can start... You can plant carrots this time of year.
Really?
Right. And that's what I'm planning to do tomorrow or this weekend. I have a raised bed that I started cleaning out and haven't gotten completely cleaned out. So I'm going to get all the weeds out of it that are there. And then I'll put the carrot seeds down. And then I'll put one layer of floating row cover down. And whenever it's the right temperature, they'll start growing, and then I'll have really delicious, really early carrots that would probably be full-size carrots in May.
So you plant them now and you start harvesting in May?
Right.
Okay.
And I have planted carrots right after Christmas, right on December 26th, and we have done it on... in early January, and that also works.
Do they taste any different when you grow them this time of year?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
They taste everything when you raise it when it's cold, it's much, much sweeter.
Really?
Yep. Mm-hmm. So the winter carrots are the best. Now, I think, Kate, do you raise winter carrots too?
I do. I always sell through them way too fast. I can never grow enough carrots.
Yeah.
But I do think that the flavor of a carrot that you planted in late July or August, mm-hmm. and you're harvesting it after it's been frozen a couple times in frosts, I think those are the best. I actually don't do spring carrots anymore because they never seem to really compare flavor-wise. They'll be beautiful and they'll be okay. They're still better than what you can get in the store, but nothing like that winter carrot.
Yeah, we have a lot of carrots we're still selling, and we're still going to the Madeira Farmers Market that's a year-round market. So we'll have carrots there at the market for sale today. But those were the ones that were planted in mid-July, mm-hmm. and then were harvested in December and January, and we're in the walk-in. But so the next batch will be those ones that I'll get planted hopefully tomorrow.
Right. Well, you talk about carrots, those root vegetables. What about other root vegetables? Can you plant those too now?
Absolutely.
Or is carrots the main thing?
I've got radish and turnip going.
Right. I'll probably mm-hmm. plant radishes with my carrots. Mm. So radishes, yeah. Now, normally a radish will be, if you would plant a radish, it'll be ready to eat in 25 days. Now, when you plant it this early, when it's this cold, it might take it two or three times as long to grow. But it will grow. And they'll be real mild.
What about asparagus? Everybody talks about how you eat asparagus in the spring. Is it too soon to plant asparagus?
Well, asparagus is a perennial. So,
It is.
Yeah,
it's a perennial. See what I don't know? Okay. Yeah.
So normally you plant the asparagus. You can buy crowns and plant the asparagus, and then you would wait 2 or 3 years before you'd actually harvest it.
And then when does that start coming?
Oh, gosh, that is very weather dependent. I've had it break ground as early as late March, but often I don't think it really starts flushing here until into April.
Yeah, we usually get the first of the asparagus the very last week in March, the beginning of April. So, and then we'll continue harvesting for 6 weeks.
We're talking about your lawns and gardens today on Cincinnati Edition, and our number is 513-419-7100 if you have any questions or comments. So we're talking a lot about the beds and cleaning out the weeds and the leaves and all that stuff that's piled in there for the winter with the snow and all that we've had. But what about the rest of the yard, the lawns, the trees? What should you be doing with that part of your yard right now?
Well, gosh, I try to have as little lawn as possible personally, but in trees especially, and for those of us who have like cane fruit, like raspberries and blackberries, this is when I do my pruning before things break dormancy. You know, in my yard at home, I've got a relatively young dogwood and I've got a Japanese maple that I'm going to be doing some pruning to help that shape here in the next couple weeks, probably this weekend. And then at the farm, I've got a fall-bearing red raspberry that I will be pruning so that it has all the opportunity for fresh growth.
So when you talk about pruning and you say you want to get that all cleaned up now before the new growth starts, how small do you want to make it? How far back do you want to cut things?
I think that depends very much on what it is that you're pruning. Often when you cut back things like the perennial herbs, I will whack them really far back, like maybe just a couple inches off of the ground, because you want as much new growth as you can. Anything that's left over is going to be really woody and tough, and it's not really going to be growing from that same spot anyway. Whereas with the trees, I do it more for shaping. I want to open up some space in the center of the tree, because it allows for better airflow, especially if it's a fruit tree. You don't want that fruit kind of going into the middle. But for the decorative trees, they benefit from that opening up also. You can tell if the wood has died or not, because when you start pruning, you'll see if it's dried and brown or it will still be green in the middle. I tend to take it a little bit into where it is still alive. But since it hasn't broken dormancy yet, it's not actively growing. You're not hurting the tree by doing this. If anything, you're going to prompt it to grow more once it starts.
Melinda, your advice in pruning?
Well, I guess, yeah, like Kate says, it depends on what it is that you're pruning. And we'll go through and prune our blackberries soon. Asparagus, we go back to asparagus, we'll take that. There's all the fronds that were on the plant from last season. We need to go through and cut that all the way down to the ground. We don't actually cut it. You can take a rake and even whack at it. And some people like to burn it, prefer to burn the, and that was the traditional way of.
How do you stop the burn before the whole plant's gone, or does it matter?
Oh, no, you want the whole plant to go.
You do. You don't want to see anything.
You don't want to see
anything.
The
good stuff is underground.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so it's an herbaceous plant, which means that it dies back, completely back to the ground in the wintertime, and then it sends up all new shoots in the spring. So the traditional way was to burn it in the wintertime, and then that gets rid of all. There is an asparagus beetle that overwinters in the frond, so then that would get rid of the asparagus beetles. But the praying mantis really like to leave their egg cases in there. So try to go through and find the praying mantis egg cases and protect those and keep them so the praying mantis little babies will come out in the spring. And
so praying mantis are good? They are.
Yes, very much so.
They eat the bad bugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well then don't get rid of those eggs, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Again, our number is 513-419-7100. You can also email us, talk@wvxu.org. And we got an email from David who said he purchased some seeds about 5 years ago. He's never planted them. He wants to know they're still undamaged and in an envelope. Are they expired? Can he plant them?
Oh, gosh. I would venture probably not, unless it is like a member of the cucurbit family, which means like a squash or a melon. But even so, 5 years is a long time, especially if they haven't been kept in a temperature-controlled environment like your refrigerator.
I would say that he might want to go ahead and try it.
Yeah.
They may or may not grow. The best way to keep your seeds alive a long time is to keep them in a refrigerator or a freezer. You want to keep them away from moisture, and you want to keep them away from temperature. So Ziploc bags in the refrigerator or in the freezer. And he could just try it. He could take a few seeds out, put them between wet paper towels, and watch them for a week or two and see if they sprout. And
can you plant them once they sprout?
Yes,
you could. So some things might be okay, and some things don't hold up very well, and some other things do. And if you do keep them where they're out of the moisture, a lot of times the seeds will stay pretty well. So
yeah,
but I didn't realize seeds went bad. I guess they can.
They have a finite lifespan for the most part, and I think the storage of it means more than anything else. And as I said, some seeds keep better than others. It's worth a try.
But in order – and you said just to put them on a paper towel and water. I remember when I was a kid in school back more years than I want to count, something about vinegar. We used to do vinegar, I think, on seeds to make them.
No, I've not heard of using vinegar.
One of the things that I do from time to time, especially if it's a suspect seed like this, is giving it a bit of a soak in warm water first for anywhere from a few hours to overnight, and then you put it in your moist paper towel, because sometimes that can help prompt germination, especially if you're dubious as to if it's going to work or not.
When I had bean seeds and they were a few years old, I would take 10 out of each package and put it between paper towels, and then it's real easy to do the percentage. You say, well, 50% of them sprouted. Maybe I'll plant them twice as thick, or 70% of them sprouted. You know, I'm okay with that. But one thing that I noticed after planting them is that the germination was real variable, and so I thought, you know, well, enough of them came up that it's worth planting. But then when I planted them, they didn't all come up at the same time. It seemed like some of them sprouted, and then some of them waited a few weeks. So then it was a weird bean patch because
they were all at different levels.
Yeah. So that didn't work so well, I guess.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking today about beginning to prepare your lawn and garden for spring. My guests are Carriage House Farm Garden Manager Kate Cook, Turner Farm Adult Education Director Melinda O'Brien, and we're happy to take your calls at 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook or Twitter. And again, if you have those questions, get them in early. We do have a question from Susan in Lebanon. She called in and says she has a boxwood strawberry that is overgrown, and she wants to know if she should prune it or just use a hedge trimmer.
Well, I did a quick Google search on a boxwood strawberry, and I didn't find very much. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say if it's a boxwood, I would take hedge trimmers to it, because that's going to be a lot faster than, you know, doing it with a hand clipper. Or if it's a strawberry plant, I would say see if you have some viable daughter plants once it breaks dormancy, and then move it around. But I'm guessing
what's a daughter plant?
So strawberries will do their main thing, and they'll be a strawberry plant, and then after they're done fruiting, they'll send off a runner to start a new plant, and that's considered a daughter.
Okay.
And for those of us who do strawberry production, you would take that daughter plant and plant it for next year, because the main plant won't be as productive.
Very good. All right. And we have a question now from Wally in Union, Kentucky. Hi, Wally. What's your question?
I am teaching a group of 7-year-old Cub Scouts, and our project is to start a plant inside now and replant it in their yard in the spring. And I was wondering what seeds would be easiest for them.
Easiest. Well, I always gravitate toward radishes for these kinds of projects, because they germinate quickly and they grow quickly. And for young folks, having that immediate gratification is always good. I know my daughter, who is 10 now, is pretty fond of the French breakfast radish because they tend to be pretty mild.
Yeah, but if they want to transplant outside,
that might be tough.
You might want to go, and are you going to be starting these right now or in a couple weeks?
Yes.
So you want something that you could start right now.
Yes, maybe.
Yeah, well, parsley might not, even mm-hmm. spinach and parsley. This time of year, the earliest things I start usually are the perennial herbs and perennial flowers, ones that would, you know, live more than 1 year. And onions, we start onions mm-hmm. this time of year. And it's almost time to start broccoli and cauliflower and those sorts of things. But you could, you know, parsley would be a good one. And also parsley, the other good thing about parsley is that it's the host plant for the black swallowtail. So even if you're not interested in eating parsley, you could, let the boys know that this is the host plant for the black swallowtail, and they might get the parsley caterpillars on it, and then those go into make a chrysalis and then become the beautiful black swallowtails. The bad thing about parsley is that they are very slow to germinate. So if the boys put those in pots, it might be 2 weeks before you'd see the little green plant coming up.
Does it have to be edible? Are there any flowers they could plant that would
Yeah, sure.
Transfer?
There's lots of flowers. I have started in the greenhouse already. I've started delphiniums and a lot of perennial flowers. Another alternative might be milkweed.
Oh yeah, milkweed.
And a lot of the milkweeds make very pretty, attractive flowers, and some of them are native to this area. And you can also get the seeds free from the Civic Garden Center and the Nature Center. They give away free packages of seeds. And there's if you go online, you'll find a whole list of places where you can get those seeds free. Now, there is one thing about the milkweed seed, and that is that you should put it in the in your soil and then put that pot with the soil in it in the refrigerator for a couple weeks.
Really?
Right. And then you get it out and put it somewhere warm. And
all this refrigerating I just didn't know about.
Yeah.
And then all about dormancy.
The Asclepias tuberosa, the orange one, it makes a real pretty orange flower. It is native to this area, and it is perennial, so it would come back year after year. And
Wally, good luck with that.
Thank you.
Take care. Thanks for calling. We go now to Ed in College Hill. Hi, Ed. What's your question?
Hi. I have a whole hedge of Euonymus elatus that is green bush that has gotten really leggy. It's like about 8 foot tall. And I'm thinking of cutting everything back down to the base because it's gotten like lichen, et cetera, a lot of breakage. I don't know, am I too late to do that or can I do that? And the second question is I also have wisteria, which I missed cutting back in November. And should I just let it go and suck it up or, you know, wait until next year, cut it back? I don't know what to do with that.
I would, on the wisteria, I would go ahead and prune it back after it flowers.
Yes.
Okay.
If there's evident dead wood on there, you can clean that off, but I wouldn't aggressively prune it. Yeah.
Okay.
And with that Euonymus, did you say that's the burning bush?
Yeah, the burning bush, Euonymus elatus, yeah. And that's like 8 foot tall. Some of the bushes are like huge, like 8 foot tall. It's part of a hedge. Should I just cut the whole thing down and let it grow back, or am I too late again this year?
I wouldn't say too late. I think you could get away with doing some pruning now, but again, I would avoid being too aggressive with that pruning. Yeah, and plan a more aggressive pruning later on.
Ed, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye bye. One of the things I've noticed and I don't do any hedge trimming. My husband does it, I'll be honest. But I've noticed even years ago when I was a kid, when you go to trim a hedge sometimes, all the growth is on the outside. If you trim it too far, you've got all this woody stuff. If you cut that, will that start growing again? Or are you just stuck with all that woody stuff?
Yeah, they can break. They can. There'll be buds on there, and they can break from down in the center of the plant.
So don't worry too much.
It really does depend on what it is, because mm-hmm. they all have slightly different growth habits. And again, that's where, you know, doing a little reading up on the specific mm-hmm. variety will be beneficial.
Right. Our phone number is 513-419-7100 if you have a question or a comment. Harry is calling from Brown County. Hi, Harry. What's your question?
My question is, I've got a bunch of ornamental grasses, and they're all tall and blown over and brown now. What is the easiest way to get rid of those? Is it to cut them back, burn them back? And also, I've got some that I want to completely eliminate. And what's the easiest way to kill those?
Uh-oh. Well, I would say that you could probably burn them for the trimming part of it, but to kill them, you may have to dig them out.
That wrong answer. Real pain.
How long would that take?
Oh, gosh. Some of our invasive grasses here were originally brought here as decorative or ornamentals, and they're so good at spreading that now they're invasive species. So,
I'm sorry, but if you really want to kill it, you will likely have to dig it out. Those roots can be very pernicious.
And there's no, what's the word I want? Chemical?
Oh,
I
like a herbicide?
Yeah, is there anything like that that would...
I mean, as someone who doesn't use a lot of herbicides, I can't speak to it much, but I would say that a spot treatment of something like Roundup would probably slow it down really well. Yeah.
Okay. I've got another question. As far as burning them back, just set them on fire, or do you use lighter fluid? Or
we should. We did get it. One of our producers says, you know, be careful with checking local ordinances before doing
right.
any burning.
Yeah.
But how do you go about burning?
Well, I have this lovely tool called a flame weeder. And it's often marketed as like ice control for your driveway or your walk, where it's something that you can attach directly to a propane tank. And it's a long handle, and it's like a little mini flamethrower. I'm sure households don't necessarily keep those in the garage. But if there is a lot of material there to be consumed by fire, you might want to consider cutting it back first. And then burning the debris, just if you're afraid that you're not going to be able to contain it. But other than that, I would say wait for a nice, warmer, dry day, kind of like what we might have this weekend. And
watch the wind.
And watch the wind.
Make it a calm day.
Yeah, be prepared to extinguish it when it's done.
No, I would definitely get the hose out.
Yeah.
Actually, I have one of those propane burners.
Oh, do you? Yeah, they're fun.
All right, Harry. Well, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. We appreciate it. Our number is 513-419-7100. We're talking about your lawns and your gardens today. If you have any questions, Anne wrote in on Facebook, and she asked if there are any tips that make moving a garden easier. She says the neighbor's trees are growing and creating some problems there. She's also had problems with disease, so she wants to move that garden. How do you go about that?
Like moving a raised bed garden or just starting a new plot? I think
it sounds like it's just, you know, starting a new plot. Perhaps there are some perennials in that garden now, but she wants to move. How do you go about that?
Basically, it's like starting a new garden.
Yeah.
So actually, one of the easiest ways, you know, you've got to, anywhere you're going to start a garden, there's probably something already growing there. So you've got to kill whatever is there. And one of the easiest ways to go about that, if you don't have a lot of tools, is to lay down a couple layers of newspaper and then put compost on top of that. And then you can just plant your new seeds into that compost. And you know, and the newspaper will kill everything that's been underneath.
Does it just sort of rot into the ground?
Right.
It'll break down over time.
Yeah. And then the next year, you know, you can till that all up. Now, if you have a tiller or if you know someone that has, and there are places where you can rent rototillers, you can, when it's a little bit drier than this, you can just till up a new space, or you can hire someone to come in with a tractor and a plow and plow something up. So, but yeah, and then if you do have perennial plants, you're going to have to dig those up and physically move them.
Yeah, and I would say with the perennial plants, now might be the window while they're still really dormant. And I would take extra care to damage the root system as little as possible. And when you replant them, maybe give them an extra boost of compost where you put them in so that they've got plenty of organic matter to feed from once they break their dormancy. But I would probably wait for the weather to be a little bit more stable before I start moving stuff around.
Now, you talk about compost, and you mentioned compost earlier in the show, and I didn't get a chance to ask. Are you talking about that area where we're all putting our food scraps in the backyard, and that's sort of turned into good soil, or are you talking about something you go out and purchase and use as a compost?
Yes. So at the farm, we make our own compost, and that's a combination of, you know, what we get from the horse stables, the debris from the garden. We get wood shavings from a local cabinet maker. We get spent grain from local breweries, and we get that all into a big pile that we turn a couple times a year, and we let that compost for a full year. We let it cook and break down before we ever put it in the garden. For the people who are doing compost piles at home, if you keep up with it and you turn it when you need to, or you're just pulling from the bottom, or I know that I have a barrel composter at home, which is great for breaking stuff down quickly, then yes, you can do the stuff at home. Often for a new garden, that's requiring more volume of compost than the average household can produce in a short period of time. So you may want to look to some local greenhouses or other garden supply shops and see if they have.
But you need something cold compost, not just topsoil or something like that. Or is that the same thing?
Well, no, it's not the same thing. I like to recommend a combination of the two for a new growing space, because you're going to get things out of topsoil that you're not getting in your compost. And your compost is going to provide a nutrient base that you're not going to get in the topsoil.
All right. Again, our phone number is 513-419-7100. Joe is calling from Mount Olivet, Kentucky. Hi, Joe. What's your question?
Hi, how are you? Actually, it was talking about the burning off of foliage.
Yes.
I'm on a farm where I've got 50-some acres, and once in a while I burn my fields off. And I talked to the fire marshal here, and he said just let him know ahead of time. And if there's any kind of an incline to where you're burning, try and start burning at the top and let it burn down. And also keep the wind at your back and let the fire burn against the wind. That way you don't have a chance of it leaping and getting away from you.
Strong advice. Thank
you.
That's
great. Well, good luck.
I have a question besides that, so go ahead and comment with what you want to do.
I was just going to say, that sounds like I was going to ask if you grow anything there. What's your question?
I have fruit trees. They're about 8 years old, and they're dwarf-style peach and nectarine, and I'm not doing any good. I had 1 year where fruit came on. They were loaded, and then all of the fruit dried up, and it looked akin to the shelled black walnut, and it was bleeding sap. And everywhere that there was a break in the bark or where a leaf was coming out or a branch, sap was dripping out of the trees. They are still alive. They still get leaves. They still bloom. But I have yet to get a piece of fruit off.
Oh, that's the saddest thing I've ever heard. Oh, yeah. Oh. Well, I can tell you that we had a handful of different peach and nectarine at our farm that were gifts to the farm. And we put in, you know, our due diligence in trying to make it work. But we, too, did not really see any fruit from those trees. And 2020 hindsight told us that it was because they were the wrong varieties for our region. Those types of stone fruit can be very twitchy with the sporadic weather that we get here in the spring and the fall. And I know that my other orchardist friends, it's always a gamble if they're going to get peaches at all any given year here because of the weird weather that we have in the spring, especially. I know one of my other orchard friends says he's had to pinch off blossoms from his peach trees 3 times now just this year. Yeah. So without knowing the specific varieties you have, that whole sap bleeding thing makes me think that they took on some serious frost damage, and that's compromising their bark. But
I hope you can get some
good luck. Maybe
soon.
Try a new yeah. nutrient. Joe, well, yeah. thanks so much for your call. We wish you good luck.
I appreciate your time. Thank
Take
you.
Care. Bye-bye. Speaking of peach trees, we got an email from Kathy, who first wants to know, how does she prune her peach trees? So first, how do we prune a peach tree?
trying to remember the last time I pruned a peach tree, because we took ours out. The basic rule of thumb I use with fruit trees is you want to prepare the tree to have weight on it. So you don't want branches that are too much in the middle. You want to make sure there's good airflow. So you're going to clear out the middle a bit. And then I think with the rest of the tree, you want to not take it back too much this time. I don't think you should be pruning this time of year, because you're going to be taking off potential flower buds, and that's potential fruit.
So don't do it now.
I don't think now is the proper time.
Fall,
on the stone
fall's
fruit.
The time
I'm thinking
to do
fall's
that.
Probably.
And then she had a second question, which was, and Melinda, you can probably answer this. She was talking about, when you plant carrots, can you do it from seed, or do you need to start from a plant? Where do you?
Yes, you always start with seed for carrots. You wouldn't transplant a carrot. So yeah, just get some carrot seeds, and they're very small, and make a real shallow furrow and drop them in.
Yep. So, and how close do you put them together? Do you just pour like a whole bunch in? How does that work?
Well, I'd like them to, I'd try not to have the seeds touch each other. And a lot of times we'll actually go back and thin, we'll drop the seeds in kind of thickly. And then we'll go back and actually thin them so that I can get three fingers between each set of carrots. So, you know, if you wanted to be a little bit more thin when you sowed the seeds, you could do that too. So,
and how do you know when they're ready to harvest?
You can just pull them up, and you'll have to pull them up and see.
But once you pull them up,
right,
you can't put them back
right,
in.
You can't
right?
put them back in.
Well, some varieties, their shoulders will show right above the soil line, so you don't necessarily have to pull it. Or, you know, you go to one that's got a really beautiful set of greens above ground, and then you can just clear out a little bit around that before committing to pulling it too.
and when you buy seeds, usually in the seed catalog, it will tell you how many days to maturity. So you can, I always put that on the tag when I label everything that we plant. So I put the name of the plant, and then I also put the days to maturity. So then you can kind of know when you should be expecting a full-size carrot. And carrots are usually probably 50, depending on variety, probably somewhere between 50 and 70 days to maturity.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about gardening and your lawn here on Cincinnati Edition. We're going to continue our discussion in just a moment. This is 91.7. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Mark Haney. We're talking about your yards and gardens. Joining me are Carriage House Farm Garden Manager Kate Cook and Turner Farm Adult Education Director Melinda O'Brien. We're happy to take your calls, 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. And we did get a question from Bob, who said, what kinds of vegetables can he plant that the deer won't get to?
Well,
and I'd like to know that too, because there's almost nothing in my yard except maybe, well, no, nothing in my yard. But begonias. They don't eat begonias. That's about it.
They don't seem to like anything in the brassica family. So broccoli, cauliflower, mm-hmm. kale, collards.
Kohlrabi.
Cabbage, mm-hmm. The Chinese cabbage. So they don't seem to bother any of that. Turnips. And they also don't bother onions.
Yeah, they don't care for radish greens either. Or they do hit carrot tops, I've noticed.
Right,
they
will
like the
eat carrot carrots.
Tops.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I know you're asking for vegetables, but they won't bother zinnias if you want to have a row mm-hmm. of flowers in your garden. They won't bother zinnias.
And I don't think they hit marigold either. I've used that as a border plant for a while.
So you can put those around the garden mm-hmm. and they'll avoid those and then maybe not get to those vegetables that they like.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And supposedly they don't like the furry leaves of squash plants.
Right. Well, we don't protect our squash and pumpkins from the deer until they set fruit. So right. they won't bother the leaves of pumpkins. They can eat the fruit when it starts
gets big.
Mm-hmm. When it starts setting the fruit mm-hmm. before the outside gets hard. They can take a bite out of every pumpkin in your field.
But I don't think I've ever had them hit summer squashes before, usually because they're so fast that we're out there getting them first.
But, right. Yeah, yeah. We don't mm-hmm. have a problem with summer squash. Mm-hmm. So I guess you'd be okay with cucumbers.
Cucumbers would probably work too.
Even with flowers, getting away from the vegetables a little bit, they seem to stay away from daffodils, but tulips, forget it. I mean,
right.
I don't even try to raise tulips.
Yes.
So I guess you just have to figure out what's the best in your area. Fences, right?
Yeah. Well, I know that we did big borders of like cane fruit and rose to keep them out because they definitely don't like the spiky stuff.
Oh,
so
okay.
Anything that's got a thorn on it or a furry leaf is going to be not as attractive.
We had a comment from Peter. He wants to know the difference between determinate and indeterminate tomatoes.
Well, the indeterminate tomatoes don't stop growing. They just keep you know, the only thing that gets to them is the end of the season. When it gets too cold, they die. So the plant, you know, if we had warm weather, would just keep growing until it was 35 feet tall or however. And really, the tomatoes grow more as a vine. And a determinate tomato is a plant that it gets to a certain height and then it produces its fruit, and it doesn't keep getting taller. So the determinate tomatoes were normally used by the canners if they wanted a whole lot of fruit at one time instead of fruit over a longer season. But I haven't found, with growing them, I haven't noticed. I don't know, maybe Kate, have you noticed? I haven't really noticed a big difference when you're growing determinate tomatoes from indeterminate tomatoes.
You mean the yield of the fruit?
Yeah, the yield of the fruit, yeah. And really even the look of the plant.
Yeah, I mean, there are some varieties, especially the paste tomatoes, where they've been bred to a point where they will only get so big, and they don't get as jungly as the indeterminate ones do. And I've also noticed that the fruit set is the biggest difference, is that you'll get fewer times that it'll set fruit, but you'll get a larger quantity of fruit at one time. Yeah.
We, at Turner Farm, we use mostly all indeterminate tomatoes, but we do sometimes grow Celebrity, which is a determinate.
Mm-hmm. I never knew there were a difference between the two. I never heard of it. So I'm learning all kinds of things today. Matthew's calling from Florence. Hi, Matthew. What's your question?
I have a rose bush, and it was almost dead, and I brought it back to life, but it didn't bloom any roses last year, and I was wondering, will it bloom again, or
well,
do I need to do anything?
I think when you say that you brought it back to life, was part of that cutting it way back, like pruning,
yeah,
pruning
a
lot
down,
of it off?
I cut it down last year.
Mm-hmm.
I cut it all the way down, and then it came back. I mean, it bushed out real good, but
mm-hmm.
It didn't bloom.
Yeah, well, what may have happened is, since many roses are grafted plants, and that means that there's one type of rose that's the rootstock, and then another type of rose that they introduce to the top of the plant because it's got a beautiful flower, you may have cut off that top part, in which case your rose may still bloom, but it may not be the same rose.
That'd be a surprise.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Matthew. We appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you.
We had a question, an email from Joan from Westwood. She called and wants to know how and when she should prune lilacs.
You wait until after they have flowered. So
nothing now.
Nothing now. Okay. And then as soon as the plant is done flowering, then you can go through and prune it. And what you'd want to do is stand back and look at the plant. You do want to take out a third of the lilac bush. And then, because the lilacs only produce flowers on the new growth, so if you never prune your lilacs, then your lilac gets real tall and there's only flowers at the very tippy top of the plant. And so you do want to take out one third of that plant every year, and you stand back, and the first thing you do is you look for any dead branches, and you'd take those out. And then from there, you would want to, as Kate has talked a lot about pruning, you want to kind of open up that plant so that there is light getting into the center of the plant. And you also want to stand back and look at it and think about what the what shape of the plant you want. Do you want it to be kind of vase shaped, or and that's kind of your own personal
Edward Scissorhands there.
Yeah, right? Your own personal preference.
Yeah. Very good. We go. Our phone number, I should remind you, is 513-419-7100. If you have a question today about gardening, Katie's calling from Northern Kentucky. Hi, Katie. What's your question?
Hi. I live in Northern Grant County, and you know, other than a little bit of topsoil, we mostly grow rocks. And so, I'm sort of for 3 years, just been I get in, I'm in a new garden, but I just feel like I hit all these rocks and it's this impossible feat. So do you have any suggestions about how I might start a vegetable garden in this area?
Oh, gosh. Well, I hear you about the rocks. We grow some pretty good rocks at our farm, too. And there is a period of time every year, sometimes several times a year, where we just remove rocks. And that's why we have rock walls. Mm-hmm. For you, I think... to do something that's a little less labor intensive and time consuming, maybe consider doing some raised beds where you have 100% control over what kind of media you're going to be growing in. And sometimes that can be like what Melinda mentioned about, you know, putting down some newspaper and then putting down some compost and maybe moving some of your topsoil on top of that too, and just start trying to go up versus down soil wise.
Okay. So, yeah, you could, like Kate says, you could make a raised bed, and you could actually have an actual raised bed with wood sides, but you don't also have to think of a raised bed as having permanent sides. So, mm-hmm. as Kate said, just putting down, you could raise your level of soil just with compost and topsoil. And just, yeah, keep adding compost and topsoil and horse manure is great if it doesn't have a lot of sawdust or wood chips in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I have so much horse manure. Okay.
Okay. Wonderful. But you want to be careful not to use it if it's got the sawdust and wood chips until that's really composted and broken down.
Yeah.
Good luck, Katie.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Speaking of horse manure, we go to Michael in Wyoming. You had a horse manure question. Hi, Michael.
Yeah, hello, good afternoon. I wanted to add some horse manure to my garden this spring, but I wondered if it would make the soil, you know, as they say, too hot if I put it in the spring, or should I just wait till the fall?
No, it's not going to make it too hot.
Yeah.
You can actually grow in straight horse manure. It'll be fine. But you do want it.
Oh, that'd be fragrant, wouldn't it?
It's not bad. Speaking of us.
Could be much worse.
Gardeners.
Yes.
But now, is there any bedding in the horse manure?
I was going to go someplace and try and find them, so hopefully no.
So, you don't want to use it if it has the wood chips and or sawdust, because that will tie up the nitrogen. Mm-hmm. But if you can find horse manure that is just straight horse manure, no bedding, then you're good to go. You can put that down and you can garden in it. Now, for us, we're certified organic, so we can't, we have to apply it 190 to 120 days before we take off a crop. But if you're not dealing with organic regulations, you would be fine, and it won't hurt the plants at all. Now, the smaller the animal that the manure comes from, the hotter it is. So it would be possible if you were using goat manure that it would be too hot and would burn plants, mm-hmm. goats or sheep or chickens. But
and
a large
rabbit.
And rabbit, yes, would be too hot.
No.
But, don't have to worry about cows or horses.
Good luck, Michael.
Sounds great.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Again, our phone number is 513-419-7100. Mike has a question from Westchester. He asked about how to get rid of thistleweed.
Well, if you find out, let me know. I have a thistle problem also, and it's tough. It's tough. We tried smothering it out by planting red clover and leaving it for a couple years, and I still have it. I've tried solanizing the soil by putting down clear plastic and letting it heat up. The only way we really have been real successful at getting rid of it is very time consuming, is like digging it out and then going back and digging it out again. How about you, Kate? Have you got any?
Yeah, you just have to be persistent with it, because even my grower friends who do use the herbicides, they find that it is getting to be resistant also. So we pull it out routinely. And it's one of those things where if you don't get the entire root, it will come right back.
All right. There are people that are experimenting with using vinegar, 6% vinegar,
yeah.
and but it's not always effective.
See, I see that as more of a defoliant. I don't think it kills the root systems well. Yeah.
We're going to go now to Jim in Monford Heights. Hi, Jim. What's your question?
My question is, I planted 3 Cleveland pears last spring. They were about 8 feet tall, and the deer came by and ate off, I don't know, 2 or 3 feet, and I trimmed off what was left, and they came back again and ate that down. My trees are now about 5 feet tall.
Oh.
And what can I do to prevent the deer from eating the foliage?
Well, we used to, for our orchard trees, we would buy Irish Spring soap, the bar soap. And while it's still in the package, we would drill a hole through it with a drill. And then we would take those out of the package and hang one from each tree with twine. And evidently, they don't like that smell of that strong
really?
Soap.
Wow.
And that's
that
how we've kept
happens
them.
Happens to be my soap of choice.
So you're all set. Just don't take a shower. No, I'm kidding.
All right. One bar of soap per tree.
There you go.
One bar of soap per tree. And we used to hang it on there every fall. And we would just leave it on there and then each fall replenish it.
Jim, good luck. Thanks so much for your call. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Joe's calling from Hebron. Hi, Joe. What's your question?
Hi, good morning. I have two questions. The first is that I have a little wood shop in my basement. I generate a lot of sawdust, and I've been putting it out around and using it in various parts of the yard as a mulch, mixing up with stuff. So I wanted some advice on the best way to recycle this stuff and have it benefit my yard.
Okay, let's do that one. Let's do that, and we'll see if we have time for the second one because we're almost out of time.
Sure.
Sawdust?
Well, sawdust, assuming that you're not working with walnut, is great for your compost pile, but you do want to let it break down well before you incorporate it into your garden because, as Melinda said, that can tie up nitrogen in your soil, which is part of what makes it a good mulch.
Joe, what's your second question real quick?
What is the best tasting tomato plant that I could grow in my yard?
I like the mortgage lifter.
Oh, yeah.
It's a pink tomato, heirloom, kind of takes a long time to get ready. What about you, Kate? What do you like?
Oh, gosh. I'm a big fan of the little ones like the Sun Gold and the Black Cherries. And some of the Bumblebee varieties are beautiful and tasty.
Yeah, the Sun Gold cherry tomato is absolutely the sweetest cherry tomato or tomato of any kind that you're going to ever find, I think.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for your call. What was the first one you said? The very first one?
Mortgage lifter.
Mortgage lifter. There you go. Good luck. We'll want to hear about those tomatoes as it comes to be spring and into the summer. We are about out of time. Some folks want to know about replacing lawns and pigeon manure. Can you use pigeon manure real quick?
I would.
Yeah, it'd be very, very hot nitrogen-wise, so nothing direct on top of a plant.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. We're out of time, as always, with this program. Those calls come in at the end. We can't get to them all. Thank you so much for being here today. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. My guests today were Carriage House Farm Garden Manager Kate Cook and Turner Farm Adult Education Director Melinda O'Brien. And we're happy to hear from all of you today, all the people that called in. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our assistant producer is Belinda Kai. Today's technical director was Stephen Baum. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in today for Mark Haney.